This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and I'm sitting here in Munich next to Peter. Hello, Peter. Welcome.
Hello, Robert. How are you doing? Nice to have you with us.
Thanks a lot, Peter. Once in a year, we meet each other, normally for Christmas seasons, but now in the new year, we had some delicious spaghetti and we record the first episode of the year.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, so we wanted to wish all of you, dear listeners, a happy new year, of course, as the start of the year. And I think as you came in and we were just generally chatting, I was saying, have you been doing any LinkedIn? And then we said, oh, everybody is doing their review and everybody is sharing what they think is going to happen. And then we thought, I don't think we're going to be doing exactly that.
No,
right?
Please.
But no, exactly. No, that. But what we can do is that I have been looking at, I think we've been sharing this idea that we have this common, what do you call it? Plan, content plan. So we have what, 52 weeks? Mm-hmm. And you and I, typically we look at each of us 1 week that we need to look at doing a recording. And what we can do, shall we do that? Just look at the topics, basically. We talk about it.
One more interesting news, because I think it was yesterday, and you are a big fan of humanoid robots, right?
And that's a big fan.
You're a big fan. You did an episode, I think, with the Fraunhofer guys on humanoids, and there's a German company called Neura, and Neura announced a robot, a humanoid gym, an AI gym. So a gym, normally when it's the new year, you go to the gym because you want to be fit, you want to be very sportive in the next year, you go to a gym. And now they announced a gym for robots and AI models to train the models there in their AI gym. So very interesting. I will invite the guys from Neura to the podcast about more about their AI gym.
So are robots going to be helping you to do your fitness?
No, the idea is to train models.
Okay.
Right? That you have specialized models and you can train it with real data and data in a gym. And they call it gym. And I think, do you remember that it was the guy from the Netherlands, our friend, with the cucumbers?
Right.
And he also had a gym for his robot to train his models in a let's say digital environment.
Yeah, a simulation.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that what we're going to be doing in Amsterdam? We talk about world models for robotics as one.
Yeah.
Isn't that exactly this idea?
Yeah.
So the robots are going to be able to train themselves in a simulated environment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
And I think it's very interesting because they announced this gym and it's also a business model to establish a gym, a platform for this. There are some players like NVIDIA. They are also offering something this.
Huge.
Yeah, huge. But
huge,
it's huge. Interesting that they are also going into this field when it comes to AI platforms, not only focusing on the hardware side. So combining hardware and software, gym, train the model, infrastructure for training. So I invite the guys to talk about that.
Yeah. So one topic, humanoids. Sure. Humanoids are going to be with us for some more time. I forgot his name. He was visiting Munich and he's going to go to other cities. I don't know if you saw him. And he saw that there's about 30 or 40 robotics companies. Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't see that, I think. And I was suggesting we should change our famous quote for Bavaria, which was a laptop and Lederhosen, to robot and Lederhosen.
Yeah.
And I had one of the AI LMM systems produce a wonderful robot in Lederhosen, actually, today.
I'm really looking forward to meet the guys from Agile, because they will join us in Amsterdam, and Agile is also based in Munich.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And
yeah,
they will join us in Amsterdam at our event with Stratus, I think in 2 weeks. We are there in Amsterdam.
Yeah, we are.
And I'm really looking forward to what the Agile guys will tell us, because they also presented a humanoid, I think, last year, I think November or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what do you have?
Okay, I still need to be convinced for the use case of humanoids in the factory. But, you know, I want to be convinced.
Yep.
So you guys and girls out there, do that. Let's finish with the first one that we're doing today. You'll talk about it in the end. I was going to talk to John Harrington. He is stranded. The topic is MCP, so we're going to be moving that out.
Still MCP.
There you go. And there's going to be another. So at the moment, MCP is still out here. And I want to understand where exactly the relationship is between MCP. You could say it's like an architecture or a protocol. It's like a language, and it's very similar to what I've been doing the last 10 years before that, where I came from softing. It was about Profinet, and it was about OPC Way, which you and I run the OPC Foundation podcast, or we produce the podcast as well. That's my number one interest. What is it? How is MCP going to be using a communication architecture like OPC Foundation? So that's one topic. We're going to need to move it out because, as I say, John was stranded. Not sure if you have other topics there in between.
Yeah, I did a recording in December with the guy, with the cucumber guys, because they did an update on their robot. So it's a more robotics-focused episode in the end of January.
Okay, very good. I'm going to be talking to James maybe a bit earlier about implementing AI agents in factories.
Okay.
Agents, of course. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to continue to be. We see loads of stuff around agents. There's always the discussion about the hype. Maybe when we just talked just in a second about MCP and we said, is MCP going to make it? I think the big question is MCP going to come? So are we at the top of the hype maybe or close to it? And then it's going to come down to the trough of disillusionment. That's always going to happen. And I think the question is MCP going to come out of the trough of disillusionment or not? That's the same for the agents. I would say for agents, I would have a stronger feeling. Agents are not going to go away. I think we're still going to have easily 10 years until agents are going to be working perfectly the way that we would like them. But I must say, I was just thinking that now that I'm using because I happen to have this Google phone, and I say, well, when I'm going to say it here, I say, okay, Google. And I think behind it is the Gemini. I was asking her, the female voice. You can probably change the voice, I don't know. And I must say, in my day-to-day life, things that I'm personally interested in, is very, very impressive what's happening there. I'm not sure how I got there, but maybe in the end it's about that we want to, also in a factory, in a shop floor, wherever we are, we want to just talk to, maybe call it an agent, and the agent should be doing, you know, what it is that we want to happen, right?
Absolutely. But it's a little bit tricky, right? Agent is, when it comes to safety and security topics, so there's a huge gap. And it's interesting because you mentioned, because I will do an episode in February about lossless distillation. So how to distill big LLMs down to smaller LLMs with less inference costs. And that's a huge topic when it comes to agents in the factory, because you need to run it on the machine. You need to run it next to the machine. It's an edge device, or is it a server? We have a lot of discussion. What is the edge device? What is the server device? What is the FOC? But you need to run it next to the machine. So you need inference speed. And I will do an episode on lossless distillation. That's a huge topic.
Okay, looking forward to edge and cloud is going to continue to be a huge topic. There's going to be, well, there was the big, what was happening around NVIDIA buying a certain licenses rather than buying the, it was all about the difference between the need for cloud to train models and maybe in the future also for additional other things. And on the other hand, if we say inference is going to be, at least in an industrial environment, it's going to be very deterministic and it's going to be very strongly edge. We've been following this topic for four or 5 years, I think.
But if you talk to the machine building companies, or for example to big logistics companies, and they always tell me they are not able to sell an AI service when it's connected to the cloud, because the ROI for this product is not feasible. So for the customer, it's not feasible to do that, because the cloud costs are too high. So everything needs to be on the edge. That's the first topic.
That's my expectation, yep. You recall that we talked about maybe 3-4 years ago, I said like 80% of all the process samples are going to be in the edge, at least so within our industrial environment. That's not necessarily the case. The example I just gave when I talked to my Pixel phone as an example as a consumer, I do believe that today at least I get my answers from the cloud. Mm-hmm. But depending, of course, again, call it edge as a smartphone that you hold in your hand, the next generation or the next one after that is going to be so powerful that it's going to have some kind of model on it. And only in case I ask, because you can do that today, something that is happening just 5 minutes ago, it needs to go out and find information. Sure. So yeah, we don't need to go to all of these things. I'm going to be talking to Norbert Jung. That's about people and intelligent systems. Mm-hmm. So a topic not sure that we have talked about. So it's about, like, you know, it's not only about technology. It's always about people that need to deal with the technology, right? Scaling. Andre Sagori, I have already a meeting with. It's about Audi scaling AI in manufacturing. There's not an MCP here. Edge versus cloud.
Physical
AI.
Yeah.
It's not a big one.
Absolutely. I think that's the year of physical AI, right? So Yann LeCun is coming back to Paris. He's doing own things when it comes to robots. But I think what was also Stratis mentioned in this episode we did, and what we will hear for sure in Amsterdam, that the US guys are always focused on data and then scaling, right? But when it comes to physical AI, there's more, right? So it's not only about data, it's all about the environment. And you're not able to learn it only with data. So that's an interesting topic, I think, because we have two ways to go, right? So the US way.
Or you call it already the US and the other one. Yeah. Because I recall that Demis from the
DeepMind?
DeepMind?
Demis Hassabi?
There you go. And he is not agreeing with Jan, right?
Yeah,
so if you talk about those two worlds, you could say, I mean, Demis is as a UK guy, but part of the US company. But let's not be too modest. Yeah. Let's still say that UK is still part of the European part of the globe, so to say, but very much looking forward to where that is going to go. And nobody has said that not both ways are going to have their advantage, right?
Absolutely.
Let's hear that.
I think it's a combination, right? So it's good to have a lot of data, but you need to know more about your environment you are working in, right? So, but let's see. I'm really looking forward to discussion when we meet Stratis in Amsterdam, because he organized also some postdocs, what they are working on. And we will have, I think, very fruitful discussions.
Right. We're in the middle of what's happening in Europe kind of thing. You know, I don't like too much because it's very easily moving into geopolitics, which, you know, that's happening. Yes, it is happening, but that's not the topic that we have at hand as such. But nevertheless, it's interesting, I think, for us. And maybe we're going to be doing that a couple of times. So just one example here, I see that Mistral is hiring in Munich. It's not about Munich, not at all. It's just what I happened to see.
But you mentioned Munich, hiring in Munich. But what I found very interesting, we are very focused in our podcast also on Paris, Amsterdam, Germany. But we miss Warsaw, Prague, Breslau, all the Eastern countries, because Jakub Tomczak from Shen Zuckerberg Initiative told me, you need to look to the East, because Mistral is also going to Warsaw. And that's interesting, but please go on.
Very good point. Yeah. Andre Sagori, the guy I mentioned, Audi, is actually from Hungary, right? Yeah. So, but a very good point.
Yeah.
And yes, we should, and maybe we can talk about a little bit more how we do that. Yes, it should not just be Munich or Würzburg or whatever kind of place, but it would be nice maybe once a month to be looking at what is a specific European company and then including the Eastern countries of Europe. What are they doing? What are they offering to us? And is it what they are offering us? Are they sensible, usable services for us to be used? Or And then another group of our listeners would say, not completely, maybe, but it's 80-90%. I use it anyway. And somebody else would say, if it's not 100 or 120%, I'm going to stick to, let's say, the US-based solution.
But I think it's very interesting for our listeners also to understand, because, for example, if you're a mid-sized company like Arburg or Trumpf or SICK or Vitron, it's very difficult to hire people from Zurich, Paris, Stuttgart, I don't know, Linz, Amsterdam, because there are all the big players, Bosch and OpenAI. So you have a lot of competitors. But if you go more to the east, you have maybe the turf is bigger, right? The turf to attract talents for industrial AI. But we need to discuss this in the podcast.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we've looked at talents before, right? So and that is then again related to humans, you know, employees. You know, we have specific industries again around us that are not very bright. Others are a lot brighter. So we shall be talking about that a little bit as well. One that is actually related, I know it's going to be showing up here somewhere. Because we're almost through the year, right? No, it is our friend from Trumpf. You recall his
Jens
name.
Otten.
Oh, Jens. Jens. Yeah, I didn't see him here. Jens has been doing, he's been moving into the HR department, and he has been training hundreds, if not thousands, of Trumpf colleagues in times that have not been that easy the last 2-3 years. So it's this really counter directional, let's make sure that when the market becomes better again, we are there and everybody understands what we've been doing with AI in the canteen, right?
Right. So let's come back to our episode today.
Yeah, please do. What are we going to be listening to?
We will listen to Johannes. And Johannes, I met Johannes in Copenhagen, and Johannes is a $1 billion guy, a 1 billion euro guy, I would call him. And he works for Sprint, that's the German initiative for innovation, and innovation agency, I would call it. And this year, they have a competition. And at the end of this competition, there's $1 billion for one startup. So if you want...
Is it really $1 billion for one startup?
$1 billion for one startup. And he will explain us in the main part now how to get these $1 billion. And he's an interesting guy because he worked with Ilya at OpenAI. He's an OpenAI guy, Johannes. And he now came back to Germany and worked there for Sprint. And I met him in Copenhagen at Europe's. And yeah, the $1 billion euro guy. And I'm really looking forward because you already scrolled through the summer because we need to do then an interview with the startup which got the 1 billion euros.
Yeah, let's see. Let's get a feeling
It's a good signal for Europe. 1 billion.
I think so as well. If you hear this and you know that you're going to be, I don't think it's like a secret if you're going to be going for it, right? Not everybody's going to win, I understand.
Yeah.
But if you, dear listener, you know, you are going to be part of this contest, I think we can call it, and you want to be part of, you know, you want to share with the other listeners what it is that you're doing, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can talk about that as well.
We have no influence on the jury, but let's see.
That's what you say. Maybe we are.
Maybe
they listen to our podcast.
Maybe. I asked Johannes, what is the biggest topic when it comes to AI? And he said industrial AI, physical AI, time series, simulation.
Very good.
So these are the topics for him. But he's not... part of the jury.
Okay.
Yeah.
We stopped looking at the list that we have in front of us, but time series and skew of data is another topic that we have there. So I think here we are. We gave a kind of a little bit of a direction of things that we will be talking about. We can't look further than a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, I guess. So there's going to be many, many, many additional topics and always way too many. Nevertheless, if you have a great topic that you want to talk about with Robert, myself, let us know.
And thanks a lot to our partner Siemens. Already since, I think, 3-4 years, with our partner with the podcast. Thanks a lot, Siemens. Greetings to Boris. We are really happy to have you on board. And do not forget our events. So we start in Amsterdam in January with Stratis. Then we go into summer with AI in the Alps. And then we go in autumn... AI on the volcano.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah.
Where? Which volcano?
Yeah,
Italy?
That's a secret.
Oh, that's a secret. Okay.
AI where, on the
where,
volcano.
Okay. I'm going to be asking my Google very soon where the volcanoes are.
It's not a big volcano, but it's a nice topic, right? AI on the volcano.
Oh, that sounds, is it going to explode when we're there?
Maybe. But there's maybe one hint. There's a church on the volcano.
Okay. I still don't know it. Robert, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Dear listener, wishing you a very good time. May all your wishes come true
don't
for
2026,
and don't forget the gym.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
My name is Roel Weber, and my guest today is Johannes Otterbach. For the past week, you have been known as the 1 billion euro man. Johannes, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Happy to be here.
Before we talk about your ideas at Sprint, please introduce yourself briefly to the listeners.
Yeah, I'm Johannes Otterbach. As you already mentioned, I'm an innovation partner at Sprint. My background is in physics, and I've been traveling all over the world. Like, I've been working in Valley for a couple of years. I'm sure we get into the details there. And came back to Europe in 2021 to move the European AI needle and quantum computing needle a little bit forward. And yeah. We talked about 1 billion euro challenge initiative from Sprint about like a little bit more than a week ago now. And I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Let's talk about money. What are you up to at Sprint? What is the idea behind the 1 billion euro?
Yeah, first of all, maybe it's good to know what Sprint is all about. Sprint is the German federal agency for breakthrough innovation, essentially a government-backed VC. We are in the game of like figuring out like what are breakthrough technologies that are just coming out of academic labs, are too early for the regular venture capital market, and trying to bridge that, what we call the valley of death, between the academic research and the early technical prototype to then hand it over to industry. On the other hand, we are also, of course, interested in creating new or putting impulses into the European economy where we see like we're falling behind. And AI is one of these fields where everybody acknowledges, along with the whole kinds of digitalization, that Europe is fairly far behind. And especially in Germany, we are well behind the curve. So what Sprint sets out to do now is to launch an initiative where the goal is to incubate up to 3 frontier AI labs, is what we call them, over the next 24 months, starting in July.
German AI labs or European AI?
No, European. All across Europe, right? So that's our core mission, because AI is something that is too small for or too big for just Germany. So any kind of European nation state will be too small. So it's a pan-European initiative that we're launching. And we are starting in July for 24 months to incubate up to 3 labs that are then well positioned and supported to raise up to 1 billion euros each of them. So that's our promise into the ecosystem to incubate and raise significant amount of money for really, really strong teams in Europe to put ourselves back on the industrial AI now.
So 3 teams, but there was also a figure about 125 million euros. Can you explain a little bit the rules of the game?
Totally. So the way that it starts, we announced it at Europe's a couple of weeks ago, that we started with what we call a sprint challenge. That is a competition starting in July. So the phase up to from now until July, we are doing a lot of ecosystem activation to identify really, really strong teams that can apply for this 24 months. And then in this 24 months, what we are running is like a big competition where we have 2 major milestones before the very end. And we start out with 10 teams. We down selected to 6 teams. We then down selected to 3 teams. And by the end of the 24 months, the 3 teams that have gotten through have received each already 25 million euros in non-dilutive funding. The total program for this competition is 125 million that we allocated. And at the end of those 24 months, the way that Sprint is working, we're activating also all the industrial stakeholders and ecosystem. Then we, together with those teams, try to raise up to 1 billion euro each from those teams. So we have 25 million in non-dilutive funding, plus then the 1 billion to continue the journey.
So let's share a little bit the rules or the milestones. What is your idea behind that?
I mean, the idea is fairly simple, right? Like, we are asking the teams to dream big, to be really, really ambitious, and develop a hypothesis, an idea of how frontier AI for Europe should and could look like in the future. it doesn't need to be LLMs, right? It can be anything that you really believe is like the next frontier of AI.
But if you want to spend 1 billion euros, you need to train a lot of things to spend 1 billion euros at the end.
Right. And that's kind of the key of the 24 month, right? Like come up with a hypothesis and a really good actionable plan, how you actually deploy 1 billion euros in a reasonable time frame over, say, like 3 to 5 years in order to push the AI frontier forward, right? And so we want to give you some time in order to give you like the preparation time and coalesce and galvanize the ecosystem around it.
It sounds very easy to spend 1 billion euros, but it will be very difficult to do that at the end. Or am I wrong, Johannes?
I believe it's not that trivial, right? Like if you think about like what the... Just like break it down, like 300 million a year, right? Like say you want to spend it in 3 years, it's like, yeah, roughly 333 million a year that you have to spend. That's a lot of GPU hours, right? There's probably like several thousands of GPUs. You have to figure out like, how do you get the GPUs in the first place? Because like they are not lying around. Everybody thinks like compute is the bottleneck, but sometimes even the procurement of compute is the bottleneck.
No, it's talent.
Then it's the talent, as you say. It's also developing the operational plan of like how you actually allocate the resources over time. How do you scale up your operations and then also bring it into the market as well, right? Like because frontier labs doesn't mean it's academic research, but the way that we define frontier labs is research and deployment. So the deployment part is really, really important. And running deployment operations is very different from training a big model.
But I think the European idea is not to scale more and more and more. We always hear that scaling is over. So maybe to spend so much money in GPU is not the goal of the European strategy. Or am I wrong, Johannes?
It could be. I think scaling is definitely one idea that should be followed, could be followed. But it doesn't have to be scaling one single model into a ginormous training cluster, right? Scale can come in a lot of different ideas, right? For example, if you're looking in agentic AI systems, and you could think about like scaling to thousands of very, very strong, small, bespoke agents that are very specific to their use case. And then figuring out like how do these agents interact with each other? Then the scale is not in the number of parameters of a single model, but the number of agents that you have to develop, right? Or you're saying like, I'm spending more time in like figuring out how I get industrial AI data. NXAI is one of these players in that regard, and figuring out like, how do we actually scale to industrial AI? So data acquisition becomes a problem. So the scaling here is in figuring out like, how do I scale my operations in order to get industrial data? Or I'm going into the medical area where I'm finding a completely different type of problems, or we go into hardware with robotics, where then there's also like another dimension of scale. So think about like scaling, not simple in terms of number of parameters or just like the data that you need, but like what are other dimensions where scale can matter? And that's it.
I thought about scaling because you mentioned the GPU first, right? And when I talk to startups, it's not always the GPU topic is not first. So first is more, do we have the engineering competence? Do we have enough talent? And I think the scaling and the GPU is a third or fourth topic at the end. Or maybe I talked to the wrong startups. But because we are, from a European perspective, we are more focused on, let's call it, efficient, smaller. We have not so much data sets like industrial data sets. They don't want to share their data with us. So it's a totally different landscape compared to the US landscape.
Absolutely. You're completely right. That's why I said like scale is
different. Yeah.
Something that is just different, right? If you think about like how the also European economy looks like, we are very strongly focused and centered around what we call the Mittelstand. It's like SMEs, right? Small and medium-sized enterprises. So you have to figure out solutions that scale to thousands and hundreds of thousands of SMEs. That's a different way of thinking about scale, right? Like how do you actually address those instead of in the US where you have a very few, very large key accounts. In Europe, it's much more like the broad Mittelstand that you have to address. And so that's a different type of scale. And they're skeptical.
Because it needs to be industrial grade at the end. A one must be a one. A two must be a two at the end. Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah. Can you please share once again the time horizon? So when does the program start? So it starts in May, you said, right?
Correct. So The deadline for applications is in May. We're opening the application process soon. It should be January or February. You can always find more on our webpage, which is next-frontier.ai. You can sign up for the waitlist where we will regularly send out more information. But the deadline is in May. Then the jury measurement or the jury selection process is in June. And then July 1st, we wire you the first tranche of money and you can start.
Is it a lot of paperwork, Johannes? Is it a typical German approach or is it a new way of German approach?
This is a great question. And it's a very simple process. Like we have like a very small request for proposal where you hand in your proposal that is then evaluated by a jury. And if you're invited to pitch, then you're coming in pitch in front of the jury. And then by the end of 2 days of through the selection process, you know whether you have been taken or not. So it's a very, very simple process. We are also like starting now doing a lot of activation phases. So there will be meetups, there will be webinars, there will be other kind of information where you can always ask more questions around how the application process looks like. And also if you're a very, very small team and you say like, oh, July is too far away, I need money right now. We just opened the application process for a small, kind of a bridge funding.
Oh, great. Great.
Where you can apply for what we call a small Funke, which is a very, very small challenge. But you can apply already now for a small amount of money. That doesn't give you any...
Also for European startup.
Also European. Everything that we do is European at Edgewind. And that doesn't give you any advantages or disadvantages to participate. So you just get money to start now to develop your hypothesis and thesis. But in the end, you have to go through like the regular application process for the big initiative either way. So if you say like you want to start right now, go out and apply for it.
Let's talk quickly about the jury. Is it an academic approach or is it a mixture from entrepreneurs, researchers? What is your idea when it comes to the jury?
We are in the process of selecting the jury, so I cannot tell you too much details about it yet because we haven't completely selected.
But do you have an idea how the jury should look like?
We have an idea, and what we are looking for is essentially, or what we are trying to optimize for, is for jurors that come out of the industrial and academic labs, specifically targeting new modalities, frontier research, like what is the state of the art and different types of approaches to really get like a world-class jury together in order to optimize our chances that we really find 10 teams who have a really, really big chance of bringing industrial AI back onto the table across the globe, right?
Oh, great. So let's talk a little bit about technology. And Johannes, you are a tech guy. And which paper blew you away most recently? Where did you say, well, that's not bad, and why?
That's a great question. It's a little bit of a curveball because like one of the challenges that I, of course, have is like staying on the press of like doing all of those ventures and talking to a lot of teams. So I get most of my information these days from teams in Jungle. Things that blow me away are papers that make significant progress outside of LLM. So we see like these big swath of LLMs and...
Yeah, but you are an OpenAI guy, right? A former.
I was an OpenAI guy, yes. And I was very happy at OpenAI when they were still doing a lot of independent research in all types of axes. I was never the guy who was thinking about like go big or go home is the only answer. So I'm super excited about like all kinds of papers that are addressing systems that are societally relevant, like simulating physical environments, right? So I'm super impressed by the models that can now predict fluid simulations. That was one of the recent papers that I found super exciting coming out. I'm very impressed with all of those AI systems that are getting into the nitty-gritty details of material science, right? Like predicting magnetic properties, predicting metal organic frameworks. Those are super interesting topics. Also, I saw a recent paper about making progress how to build better high-temperature superconductors that are really relevant for us. So these are the kind of breakthroughs that I'm regularly mind-blown by making the progress, because those are the ones that show us the promise that AI has and that we should venture towards in materializing them, right? Because they are still academic or early application stage, and they're just like, for me, a little bit, they lift the kind of fog that we always had, right? Like we have these guiding principles of like what AI can really be. And those are the things that give me hope, right? But then sometimes I see a chatbot and I think like we burn so much energy and electricity, just like asking ChatGPT what I should make for dinner. That makes me kind of sad if that's the pinnacle of AI. So I don't want to believe that. That's why these all these other applications really, really make me hopeful.
But is this a typical European approach? All the solutions you mentioned, simulation, time series, data, predictions, forecasting stuff. Because you lived in the US, is this a typical European approach? Because we see a lot of use case in our, let's call it, traditional industries.
I mean, yes and no, right? My time in the US and Europe has like it's both its characteristics, right? Like in Europe, our tech industry and our digitization is not as thorough and full stack as it is in the US. So if I'm just looking at the US, I can build tech for tech's sake, right? I'm building the technology for another technology company that builds technology for technology companies. So there's like a whole ecosystem around it. In Europe, we are just starting to see maybe the second or third layer where you have tech company building for one tech company that then builds for something else, right? So that's kind of like where we are. So we have this a little bit of this disadvantage that we have to work with a ginormous legacy industry. But it's also our strength, right? Because we have a lot of legacy industry that is very, very strong and has been a driver of innovation. So I do actually believe that we have to figure out like how to make our legacy industry better and modernize it. And that's where AI can do really, really big things around. And so that's where I see our advantage. And on the other hand, it's also the stuff that really matters, right? Like if you we live in a physical world. We're not living in a fully digital world yet. Our brains are not hooked up to the cloud yet. So we have to figure out like what is actually mattering, right? And if you look at in the past economics, it took a long, long time before any kind of software company became the most valuable company, to which I'm still a little bit surprised. If you think about that a software company that sells you commodity hardware and stuff that makes you feel happy and feel nice is more valuable than a company that is supplying you with oil for warming your house, right? So that's kind of like, it's a little bit weird to me.
And it's funny because when you, for example, when you talk to your friends and you talk about ChatGPT and they ask me, for example, what are you doing there at NXAI with the guys? And you tell them, oh, we are doing some time series stuff. And they ask, what is this time series? What is that? And this is also a problem too, that we focus on specific domains that are not discussed between friends at parties or something. Because when you go to a party and you talk about ChatGPT, everybody has an opinion on ChatGPT. But if you go to a party and talk about time series or CFD or I don't know, or robots or humanoid robots and large action models and stuff like that, they say, oh, I'm not interested, I'm not into this. So I think that's also a problem when it comes to an adaptation of AI in a broader perspective.
I completely agree. I think we need to talk more about like what is behind the technology. I think this is actually a topic for a broader debate, right? Like if one of the things that I'm observing coming back from the US, back to Europe, I shouldn't say the US, specifically from Silicon Valley. The Valley, it's completely okay to talk about your latest and greatest technology and everybody's interested in all the different areas and honestly wants to have a conversation and learn about it, right? In Europe, we are quickly to just dismiss that and of like, I was never good at math in school or I was never
exactly
good in chemistry in school. Like, yeah, it's fine. But like, it's actually on me to tell you and explain it to you in ways that you also understand it. So I think it's a problem on both sides. People who are not interested in it or don't feel good at it or are afraid of like looking stupid, they don't want to talk about it. And people who are really, really big nerds, like the two of us who are on this call, we sometimes fail to explain it in very, very simple terms. And I think that's something where that I found the Valley is significantly better on both ends of the spectrum, where people in the Valley that are not coming from technical backgrounds are genuinely interested in learning more about it. And the people that are coming from a technical background really try to their best to go out of their way to explain it to these non-technical people. And I think bridging that gap is really important.
Because I think, from my opinion, is it because it's a huge success factor of California, right? Or the Silicon Valley. And everybody knows in the Silicon Valley that all the wealth is based on innovations by the companies, by the big companies, by the big tech companies. And so everybody's interested. What's the next big thing coming from California? And our wealth is based on automotive or some industrial approaches. And so it's a different discussion there. We also discuss a lot what's happening to the automotive industry. I think there's no discussion in California what happened to the European automotive industry. So there's different types of branches, different types of discussions in different fields.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Like, that's like actually one of the things that I'm wondering when this will happen. Like, I feel everybody, at least in Germany is a car industry. Like, I don't know who is listening to this podcast, but like in general, like, Germany is a car industry. So everybody on the street has an opinion about cars and has some expertise about cars. But as soon as it comes to, for example, computer, people say, like, I don't understand any computer and I don't want to understand anything. So I think it's one of these things where I'm looking forward to when it starts to change it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we should change it. Like, we are the ones that should change it. And that's what we're trying to do at Sprint, is like changing the narrative, pushing it out and making these frontier technologies more interesting again to people.
What is the next frontier in AI, Johannes?
Oh, that's a great question. And I would hope that the teams that we are trying to fund have the answers to that.
I tried.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I was like, I see so many different areas, right? Like, I already teased out a few topics here that I personally find interesting. The agentic systems are super interesting. Physics simulations is super interesting. But also what I see is how can we make simulations of the world in a broader sense, right? If you think about supply chains. Right now, supply chain management is a super massive problem. Everything is optimized locally, but what would happen if you could do a fully integrated supply chain? Frontiers can also happen in terms of, like, how do we make the bureaucratic system more efficient so that it serves our democracy again? Because you cannot have democracy without bureaucracy. So we need to figure out, like, how do we make bureaucracy work for people again? And that might not be a sexy topic, but I personally believe that this is also a frontier that needs to be addressed, right? Robotics is another one of these very big...
Yeah, robotics is a huge topic, right? Also in Germany.
It's a super big topic, especially in Europe in general, because we have a big manufacturing industry across all of Europe. Super, super important topic. Pharma and healthcare is super important. Medicine as a general, right? So if we talk about robots, it's not only manufacturing, but also... How do we do care, exactly, professional care, not only elderly care, but also care in ICUs or in the hospital in general, right? Like, so there's so many different topics that are on our radar. So I hope that really the teams bring it to the table, because I'm just one person and I cannot pretend that I know what the frontier is. All I can do is, like, do my very, very best to help the 10 teams that get in to set them up for success, to raise more money and continue the journey.
I'm really looking forward. Johannes, what do you have to prepare for the event? What is on your agenda?
What is on my agenda? So the next steps is, we have, like, as I already teased, the small Funke that are starting. The first application deadline is January 15th. So you get the money on Feb 1st, or we have a second deadline on Feb 15th. For March 1st, so that's our two bridge rounds. And then the next steps for us is really planning our meetups and activation phase. So if you're interested in helping us in any ways, like, either you want to be an advocate that wants to help us promote these events and get behind the initiative, super happy. If you want to do more advocacy, if you're thinking about being a partner in this whole initiative and saying, like, hey, I want to do more, I want to help activate the full stakeholder ecosystem, may it be capital acquisition, may it be industrial partners that are on board, be it government relations, you name it. If you want to be a partner, reach out. We are always happy. If you're one of those teams or one of the people that want to apply for being part of the team, reach out to us. We will let you know when our meetups are, and you can find potential teammates, or maybe you already have a team and you get more information about what we're looking for. So in any capacity, just reach out and be part of the journey.
Johannes, it sounds very, very good. Thanks a lot for your ideas, for this great idea to push the European AI community to the next frontier in AI. Thanks a lot. I keep my fingers crossed, and I'm pretty sure that we will record a new episode. I think in the mid of 2026, maybe you can share then a little bit more about the last three teams. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Robert.